with the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man.
Welcome to the Leisure Man Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papst. He's Andrew Perloff. Perloff, let's set the scene. You and I are at NBCSN in Stamford, Connecticut. We walk in the room. We've got a bevy of TVs here.
Yeah.
There's news on, there's sports, there's, you know, bracket stuff. But what are we just engulfed in?
So today is the Ohio State Pro Day, and we are seeing live coverage of Dwayne Haskins, quarterback, throwing against air.
Yes, and I'm checking my stats. He's like 12 for 12 passing in his pro day so far, which I don't know if that's a record.
I think it depends, college or pro rules, because the guy had a foot on the line on one of them.
Okay, now we're watching this, and we're trying to decipher what makes him great or not great by this pro day. I'm curious what the scouts, because there's got to be, I'd say there's 75 dudes with clipboards standing around him taking notes every time he drops back and launches a ball. What do you think they're looking for at this pro day, or are they just there to go out to steak dinners?
I'm almost positive they're not watching the workout that closely for someone like Dwayne Haskins, because they know all about him. You might watch a workout of a guy you don't know that well, but you have to. It's all, if you ever talk to a scout, their whole job is intel gathering. They're talking to strength coaches. They're talking to custodians. They're talking. So you got to be there to talk and hear and find out what the heck's the deal with this guy.
So the physical part of what he's doing out there may not be a big deal, but you've said this year that Dwayne Haskins put up monster numbers for Ohio State. And pretty much anybody would have. So you.
No. I'm not on the record saying that. Did I say that?
You said that about Oklahoma and Ohio State quarterbacks, that you can't trust their stats.
Well, they get great recruits. This one, Ohio State's weird. Yeah, Oklahoma, they're definitely going to have the Heisman Trophy winner next year, Justin Fields. Or no, who's it in Oklahoma? Yeah, is it, no, he's at Ohio State.
No, Jalen Hurts.
Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts. So he'll win the Heisman Trophy just because Lincoln Riley is scheming that up. Ohio State's got like that Urban Meyer factor, and it's a problem. But the NFL's changed so much now, we don't care about spreads. I'll tell you, 10 years ago, no spread quarterback was making it. You look at any, look at the guys who are 30 to 40. Did any of them, except for Drew Brees, play spread in college? And the answer is no.
No, I mean, Alex Smith was a spread guy.
Yeah, and he's a successful guy.
Yeah, he's kind of an outlier.
But you think Alex Smith has been successful?
He hasn't paid off. Because he was the number one pick, but he kind of went bust territory and then got out of it. Here's one thing about Dwayne Haskins. He's not a running quarterback in any way. He didn't run this year. I don't know how fast he is.
He's slow as all get out.
Which I love the fact that he's
so
slow.
You like the Eli Manning factor of him.
Ooh, I don't know if I want that unathletic.
Well, Eli was unathletic as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of statuesque. And again, I mostly want that. I want the guy to stay in the pocket and avoid hits. Everyone's excited about running quarterbacks, but then as soon as they get the pros, we try to talk about a running. I can remember they always said about Michael Vick, if he would just stop running the ball so much and focus on passing and have the threat of running in his arsenal, he'd be so much better. And he never really did. He always ran.
So do you think the NFL's evolved to the point where they can really use a running quarterback like Lamar Jackson?
No, I just think the odds are the position is paid too much. And you're too valuable to endanger yourself for multiple games. I go back to one of the perfect quarterbacks I always thought was Steve McNair. He could run. He could move. He was really strong.
Yeah.
He looked jacked. And he didn't run that often. But when he did, it was more out of necessity. And I think Russell Wilson's that same way. I want a guy who can run, like Aaron Rodgers. He runs enough. He more scrambles. You see Aaron, he tries not to go across the line of scrimmage, which is, to me, that's the ideal. The guy... run is the last resort. Russell Wilson, he's a fourth quarter runner in games he needs.
Is Steve McNair, I think he ran a lot, though, didn't he?
Early in his career.
Is he top 10 all-time in quarterback? I would imagine there.
I'll bet
not. I can't remember. It's either him or Culpepper have shocking numbers running the ball.
I always found that McNair didn't run. You know, he came out of Alcorn State. He was much more of a drop-back passer.
Yeah, no, McNair's numbers are way up there. He's one of the most prolific, right? I think he's like 5.
Okay.
Yeah, which is unbelievable when you think, because he was, but you don't think of him as that, which means that he threw the ball a lot. His passing numbers are way up there, too.
Okay, with the quarterbacks in the draft, I know we have a long time to go, but it seems like there's no buzz yet about anyone else besides Kyler Murray. No one, I know you've said there's guys who...
Well, this is Haskins Day, right?
Yes.
The Haskins, but everyone is there to write a feature on Haskins today. So that means he'll get the buzz after today, right?
Right. And we've talked about the next tier of quarterbacks and They're Drew Locke out of Missouri, who's been around for a long time. Then you go down to Jarrett Stidham out of Auburn. When do they get their day to be hot?
So I don't know if any of those guys get hot this year. I mean, you obviously have Haskins and Murray in the first round. And then you get the Locke, Daniel Jones factor. Are those guys going to sneak in? Daniel Jones is sneaking in by the chin of his hair into 31, 32 in a lot of mocks.
Right. I love the fact that if you said a year ago the top two quarterbacks in the NFL draft are going to be Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray, a lot of people said, who are those two gentlemen?
Kyler Murray, you might know.
Maybe.
Remember he came in as Johnny's backup? I mean, who's going to be the next Manziel?
Yeah. He didn't play a lot, though, in college.
No. Well, I mean, his story was the irony is he's the biggest recruit. He's like Justin Fields. He's the biggest recruit we've had. He was the number one in the country, and he just didn't work out. You're right. So does that mean, yeah, you know what people do a lot now, 2020 mock drafts? Why? We didn't even seen the number one pick, probably.
Right, because it could be the guy who transfers to Auburn next year.
Yeah, we might not even know him.
When Cam Newton left Florida, he was Cameron Newton, and no one really knew him except for getting in trouble when he was behind Tebow or Chris Leak or someone like that. And he had to go to, like, some junior college, Blinn Junior College. Then when he went to Auburn, you know, and that started that season, he was a cool transfer that a lot of people said, this could really help the Auburn program. It's one of the hottest transfer quarterbacks. Who thought he was winning the Heisman and getting the number one pick in the draft? So it's right. Those double future mock drafts always have guys like Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah.
Guys who are freshmen.
That's your guy, right.
And we haven't had time to question him yet.
Absolutely. I mean, Christian Hackenberg, like Trevor Lawrence right now is the safe guy, right? But could he be like Christian Hackenberg? I doubt it. I think Trevor Lawrence is way safer.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence is, though, if he measures at 6'6 instead of 6'5, is that a bad thing? I'm being serious.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, by the way, just a side note on Cam Newton of Florida, there's this great, I think it was SI Cover or somewhere, where they're celebrating a Florida championship, and they're right next to, who's the coach? Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Standing Cam Newton and Aaron Hernandez, 1 and 2, as high school recruits, because that was one of Urban Meyer's tricks. He let the high school recruits onto the field after his team won the title.
Jeez.
Or something. So it's Cam and Aaron Hernandez. I'm like, whoa, imagine if you had that team together. But you're right. I am afraid of, Trevor Lawrence right now.
He's too hot.
I have a wheel. Yeah, but he's too good.
Right, but okay.
He's Andrew Luck.
Who are the hottest post-freshman year quarterbacks you can remember? I'm going to go in order. Sam Darnold. Because remember, he didn't win a bowl game against Penn State, and he had almost like no blood pressure. And people were like, Sam Darnold. Josh Rosen was pretty hot after his freshman year.
He was I think he was a skunch behind Darnold. But right. Yeah, he was a big name.
Who was hotter than that? Tua's first year, very hot.
Very hot. I don't know if people saw Tua as a pro yet.
No, I don't think so. I think you're right.
Baker Mayfield helped that. Trevor Lawrence but you have to do high school too, because Trevor Lawrence was like considered like the Bryce Harper of the sport.
And Trevor Lawrence bumped the incumbent Kelly Bryant off the team, basically. That's really tough to do we're just going to bail on Kelly Bryant, who got us to the, you know, almost to the promised land.
Think about the NBA, by the way. They'll draft off high school. Markelle Fultz went number one because of his senior year of high school, not because of his freshman year at Washington.
And you look at Duke right now. Cam Reddish is the third best player on Duke, and some people have him third, fourth, fifth in the draft.
Based on high school, right?
It really is, because if you watch a lot of Duke basketball, and Duke's on 31 pro national TV games, Cam Reddish has been a bit of an afterthought as far as a focal point of the team. Now, maybe it's because the ball is just going through Zion and R.J. Barrett, and he's being a team player, or he's not assertive enough.
Yeah, but he's probably like 13 points a game. No, he's not that good. It's funny. I was wondering, coming into the year, how did they know that Zion was going to be one, R.J. Barrett two, or vice versa, and Cam was the third best player? Because how did they know? All the mock drafts had that right, that they had Barrett and Zion ahead of Cam Reddish, who was a big recruit, too.
It's exactly what you said.
They scouted well.
It's a high school draft a year later.
Yeah.
It really is a high school draft a year later.
Hey, what do you think? This is changing the subject for a sec. They're going to kill the one and done in NBA, probably.
2 years, I think.
Right. How do you think that will affect the NCAA tournament?
Well, I guess you'll have people saying, man, I wish we could have saw a blank here. I wish we could have saw a blank here. But you won't know what you missed because you didn't see it. What we will say is 2 years from now, you wouldn't have saw Zion Williamson's freshman year, which has been pretty damn entertaining.
Right.
And you could use that as a really big example of what we're going to miss. Because Zion Williamson right now would probably be a Phoenix Sun. And I checked. The Phoenix Suns have seven nationally televised games this year. two on TNT TBS, which are truly national, like basic cable.
Sure.
And then a bunch on NBA TV, like five. So if Zion Williamson were a Sun this year, he'd be averaging like 15 and 8, making some great dunks. He would win the slam dunk contest, and nobody would watch his freshman year. Instead, he was on Duke, 31 national televised games. He's one of the focal points of sports this year because he went for 1 year of college. Now, I'm all for players' rights if Zion Williamson could get paid a year early. But as a selfish sports fan, I would love them to play at least 1 year of college basketball. But their rights come first, not mine.
Do you think that the tournament... Yeah, I wonder if, you know, we used to love the tournament. We talk about this a lot, like Fab Five and all that. Right after that is when college basketball's popularity started to dip, I believe. And it's probably because of one and done. I mean, what was... When but there was definitely like a low point for college basketball. It definitely lost its place,
well,
don't you think?
Chris Webber played 2 years. Now he wouldn't even sniff 2 years. I mean, there wouldn't even be a question.
But at least he would have had one and done. For there was a 12-year period where he wouldn't have even seen college.
Right, exactly. And yeah, exactly. And then it went so extreme the other way that storylines, year-to-year storylines, left college basketball. And our interest in college basketball shifted from a sport that you rode from November to the end of the tournament to... Hardcore fans watch the regular season. We all watch the tournament because it's like this perfect vehicle for fast, rapid pace, upsets, shots, games all over, four TVs. That will never die. But the regular season college basketball, every once in a while you're going to have a Zion Williamson, and that won't happen to you.
Yeah, you do have a little bit of the Duke factor. I kind of tune into Duke no matter what's happening. Last year, last couple of years, we've watched Duke. They had Marvin Bagley. They had Jason Tatum. You know, Duke's about it. It feels like a one-team sport.
They're the easiest team to consume because the players haven't changed. Mike Krzyzewski's still there. I can name more assistant coaches at Duke than I can name head coaches probably in the Big Ten.
Oh, absolutely. Then you might be able to name, coming into the year, college players. You might know more assistants at Duke than college players returning next year.
Also, I think we look at, even if you don't watch high school basketball and ratings and stuff, you look at who signs with whom, and you say, okay, Duke got three top 25 guys. Those are the names I better learn before the next season starts. I can remember remember they had a kid, Harry Giles, a few years ago?
Oh, sure. He was huge.
Now, he got injured, and he didn't really pan out in college, and he's bouncing around the NBA.
Yeah.
But I remember going in that season, and I was like, you got to watch this guy.
Somebody called the Dan Patrick Show this week about a kid. It was a bizarre call. He's like, I saw this kid playing high school basketball.
In Milwaukee.
Or Michigan, one of those.
Yeah.
And his name was Amani Bates. And I looked it up. And the way they call it, I'm like, why would a guy call about a sophomore in high? Oh, my God.
Are you early on Amani Bates?
Oh, apparently I'm not the only one.
Are you late?
He's the biggest star in high school sports right now across the country.
Because we can't have him yet.
He must weigh 112 pounds. He's 6'9". He pulls over half court on every single possession. Steph Curry, three-point.
I think he's 14 or something.
It's crazy young. He either Steph Curry, 40-foot jumper, or dunking on three people. I'm like... He's like the next thing. You know me. I like the next, Paul. I'm more so than you. I think I'm like, I want to hear what's next. I don't care what's here.
You're right. And Amani Bates, he'll probably be one of the first or second classes of guys that go right from high school to the pros because the rule should be defunct by that time.
Is he a, well, we have to get his age. Maybe, I think it all depends. Like, I think the union's still kind of working that out. Let me make sure I have his name right. Amani Bates. Watch that name. But Zion was pretty famous, too.
Very famous. He was very YouTube and all that stuff and all that.
Yeah, he was a great YouTube player.
You know what helped out back in the 80s and 90s? There used to be this magazine called Dick Vitale's Basketball Handbook. And Vitale would list the best high school players in the country, and there'd be a picture and a bio next to him. So it wasn't just a description, and you couldn't watch the highlights because this is before the internet was invented, basically. But I can remember Shaquille O'Neal being a junior in high school and being on his top 10 list, and guys like Jamal Mashburn and all these other players in this Dickie V handbook.
Yeah.
And that was the really cool thing. I was so into high school basketball when I was in college, high school and college. They used to have this thing called the 7-Up Shootout in St. Louis.
Mm.
And they would invite maybe 8 teams from around the country, and it was like locally televised. And a couple years, I saw Sean Bradley play in high school, Anthony Hardaway play in high school.
Nice.
Hardaway was the one to me when we drove home. We were at Southern Illinois University, and we went and saw Hardaway play. And he was getting ready to go to Memphis State, which was Memphis State at the time. And we got done. He was skinny, about 6'7", 195, 190. And he dominated. He could dunk. He could shoot from outside. He had the ball on a string. Mm-hmm. And we walked back, and we're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And we planned our whole year on watching Memphis basketball.
Absolutely. Oh, I remember how big a deal he was. By Amani Bates, you're right. He's freshman, Ypsilanti, Michigan. He's the only freshman to win State Player of the Year.
Ypsilanti's a hotbed.
Yeah, he won the Michigan State Player of the Year as a freshman. He's like 6'9". Dude, there's probably another guy, too. Remember, by the way, R.J. Barrett got some of that attention last year, too. I was sorry to read this. There's this kid, R.J. Barrett, coming along.
But let's look at some of these high school players who ended up being mediocre. O.J. Mayo had a nice NBA career at best.
He was a number four pick after a year at USC.
But he was very, very famous in high school.
Yeah.
He was early social media famous. O.J. Mayo was as hot as anybody when he was a senior in high school. Remember he got kicked out of the state title game?
He probably had a 10-year NBA career. Not the worst.
No, not a bust in any way. Just like he became a solid NBA player.
I don't really love that narrative that high school players going straight to the NBA hurt players. It did hurt some, but generally the best players we've ever seen did it. LeBron did it and Kobe did it. What else do you need to do? Garnett did it.
Yeah, and you're going to be what you're going to be, but at least your finances, in theory, are set for life if you get drafted in top.
Question is, would you learn more playing a year? Would Zion have learned more playing a year at Phoenix or more playing a year at Duke? Now, he would have gotten into a professional weight training program, would have had highly paid coaches, but you still kind of feel like he learned more at Duke.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
Yeah.
Learn more basketball-wise. Let's say on a basketball court. Has this year helped or hurt his development? Like, if he was a son, you know, he's getting coached by Coach K and his assistants, which you assume from as an outsider is high-end basketball tutorial. If he's on the Suns, I don't know what the staff there is like.
Well, you got to assume it's just as good, right?
Well,
I mean, who's the Suns coach?
Or they're a bunch of bad NBA coaches because they're with the Suns.
Oh, of course. His coach is Igor Kokoskov, the guy who did not draft our boy.
Luka?
He did not draft Luka, even though he knew him. Yeah. Remember that guy became – so presumably pro coaches are pretty good too. And your coach, you get a lot more coaching him. College, remember, there's those limitations.
But I wonder, man, this may be a dumb statement. I wonder how much coaching is going on for individual development when you're a pro and what's coaching 82 games. Here's what we got to work on to win the next night's game.
It's got to be more individual in the pros, right? College,
really?
There's 31 games in college. You got to prep for all those games. They're not working on skills, are they?
I see. I would have thought the opposite. I would have thought, I don't know. I would have thought that you develop your skills better in college because they assume your skills are what they are when you get to the pros. And you're on your own to work on
it. Why does Coach K have the time to sit and work on Zion's skills? I don't think that they do any skills.
He's got like Shire and all those guys to handle that.
I would assume that in the NBA, if you got a young player, you're working with them every day. Don't you hire somebody like a nutritionist and you get a personal, get a big man coach in there?
There's no classes getting in the way.
Professional shooting coach. I think you would coach him up even more in the pros. But I'm not sure what happens in Phoenix.
You know, I'm 90% sure this isn't going to happen. But I wish that Zion Williamson could know the draft order and then make his decision whether he wants to play in the NBA or not. I know he can't do that. I don't think he could do that.
I could pull out, I guess. But
I can't. Could you?
So wait, do you want him in Phoenix or not want him in Phoenix?
Phoenix
is stacked.
Stacked and young, yeah.
I feel like that could be a dream team.
I think the Knicks make sense because of the media spotlight and his bigger-than-life persona already.
Yeah.
But, okay, we got to find this out. Could he declare for the draft, not get an agent, and go back to Duke? If he didn't like where he was drafted, that'd be a wild scene.
Wait, but let me just say, make a pitch for Phoenix. Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, and a couple other young guys. Like, that's way better than what's going to be with the Knicks.
Okay, hypothetical. Let's say Zion Williamson was offered, he can go to the Suns, the Bulls, or the Knicks, and he's got to pick one of those three. Like, it's college recruiting day all again. There's three hats in front of him. If you were him, what would you do?
I would not the Bulls. They're a bit of a mess.
Really?
Who's
Zach
coach
LaVine?
Right,
you love Zach LaVine.
I love me some Zach LaVine, but they're looking for an identity. Did they fire their coach? And there's all sorts of issues there.
But they've been it's so far past the Michael Jordan era that town is ripe for another superstar.
Yeah, but the franchise, I think, is totally screwed up.
All right,
the Suns just are loaded with talent, though. If Ayton and Booker, that's like two all-star players.
Yeah,
and Josh Jackson's pretty good, too, the kid out of Kansas. I feel like the Suns are going to come back fast.
Man.
And also, too, we've seen it's not like Phoenix. Like, we've seen Phoenix be the premier team in the NBA. In the 90s, the Suns were huge.
All right, let's move on to another thing. Yeah. I was thinking about the NCAA tournament. As we always talk about, if you talk to people who've worked in sports a long time, back in the 80s when the NCAA tournament was really up and coming and really hitting its stride, CBS had all the games, and just CBS, not CBS Sports Network, not those other networks. And so when the tournament started... there was 16 games on there was 16 games on Thursday and 16 games on Friday, Perloff. And so you'd have four games staggered a little bit at four different time periods on Thursday and Friday. So you're at home watching on your single TV, or no matter how many TVs you had, you could only get the feed of one game at a time. And they would do look-ins at other games. Let's go peek and see how Georgetown's handling Lafayette. Let's go out and see how UCLA is dealing with UTEP. But you had one game on your television. And then over the years, it developed, they would have, you'd go to a bar and have multiple TVs. But in your own home, now you can watch every single NCAA game really easy. And they have apps. They have CBS has it. Turner Sports has it. You can see every single second of every single game in the NCAA tournament easily.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So no sporting event has become more accessible than NCAA tournament. What's the sport, or I guess you'd say like NFL, whatever, that has grown the most or hasn't grown the most in fan access to the most number of games?
Hmm. By the way, I think they lost some of the mystery there when you had to sneak in. That was fun. So NFL's grown a lot because of Sunday Ticket.
Right. I have a problem with that, though.
What's that?
I still think that the NFL, I think we talked about this last year on the show. When I watch Sunday Ticket, I get just a morsels of all these games, and I don't really get the game wire to wire. It's just impossible. There's about nine early games and about four late games, average, right?
Right.
So that 1 o'clock window, I could watch, let's say the Bears are on it, I'm a Bears fan. I could watch a whole Bears game and miss eight other national football games, NFL games. Or I could watch Sunday Ticket and get a taste of all of the games.
Yeah.
Which is a nice option to have. I still think the NFL needs to blow up the 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock model and do like 12, 3, 6, 9.
Mm.
And we've talked about it before on the show. Imagine you had three games at noon, four games at 3 o'clock, four games at 6 o'clock, and two games maybe at 9 o'clock at night, West Coast games. Then you could watch more of more games. Now, I know it's staggered, so there's got to be something bad there for advertisers and networks. But you can get a window of noon until 1 a.m., which extends your advertising window an hour on one side and at least an hour on the back side. You still have Thursday Night Football. You still have Monday Night Football and all that stuff. But I think a four staggered time system could be the future of the NFL. You still have Sunday Ticket.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever heard you say that before. Are you worried about overexposure? Because that's a constant thing NFL talks about.
Let me know when it happens. You're Mr.
Well, were you one of the critics of Thursday Night Football saying it's too much?
Thursday Night Football, the only problem I have with it is that I have to get up on Friday morning.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would love to sit down and watch a Thursday night game in its entirety.
So wait, I'll give you a choice. You can have the staggered thing, or you can have football on nights that currently don't have it. Tuesday night. Wednesday night, Friday night.
Probably the staggered thing because the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday options, someone's getting screwed. If you live in Los Angeles and the game starts at 8 o'clock and you're on the roads at 6:15, you miss the first half of that game. Or if you live on the East Coast and it's an average game on a Tuesday night and it's like Jaguars, Texans, and it's 12:09 at half, and you're like, click, I got to get some sleep. But if you tell me Sunday, I can get up, watch 2 hours or 3 hours of pregame, and at noon, it's on, and I can go a stretch from one day of all-day football, I would lean towards that.
That's interesting, yeah.
You like it. I think you like it. I usually poo-poo
I like
ideas.
It. No, I like it. I mean, for some reason, it doesn't feel like they'll do it.
No.
Why won't they do it?
I mean,
first of all, you do have a lot of football. Football's on from 9 a.m.
But I think that you could have the same amount of football, but you can have the stagger.
What do you think of when they do the 9 o'clock games, though?
In London?
Yeah.
It always sneaks up on us.
Yeah, it's always lame.
So
here's my question. Why is that super lame? And how can you, like, something's wrong with that?
9 o'clock games in AM Eastern games in London are lame because what's the word I'm looking for?
First of all, the London games are just lame to start with. Like,
you're not physically, you're not ready for football yet. We have muscle memory of when we're ready for football, and it's noon, 1 o'clock on Sundays or Saturdays for college football. And you're like, this isn't right. This doesn't feel like what I've grown up with.
Right.
Maybe a 12-year-old kid doesn't care.
Right. I think what you're proposing is not very radical either.
No, it's just a little bit of a stretch.
But I got to be, from a personal standpoint, I think there are some people who be like, oh, darn, now I got to start watching at noon.
But the other thing is I can get another network involved to pay for rights fees.
Yeah.
Because now I've got, at one time, four different games going on. So I go Fox, NBC, CBS, ABC, ESPN, other. There's a lot of other people in play right now. And instead of, you could open up to the NFL and say, look, we have another broadcast outlet.
I thought you were going to help viewers.
I am helping viewers.
Dude, the game, you think helping viewers by putting it on an Amazon paywall is going to help anybody? You've just single-handedly ruined the sport by hiding games from us. Who do you think is going to be bidding on these games? You think it's going to be...
The Bezos family.
It's going to be an internet company who's going to stream it behind a paywall because of like, well, Paul had this idea to put the games at noon because he was helping fans.
Well, if this comes out, if
by the way, like I feel like you were part of it. Everyone's like, oh, NFL's overexposing itself with Monday, Thursday. There's too much NFL. It's got to keep. I remember when the ratings went down, everyone's like, yeah, because they're just like flooding the market.
I've never thought it's overexposed, and I know you've never thought it's really overexposed. You know, one of the things that makes the NFL special is that you can never get enough of it. And like when the season ends, you're like, I hate that it's over. I can't wait for next season. I don't think this would ruin that.
You'd still be wanting more.
Yeah. And you could, you know, ESPN and places could put Mac football on Wednesdays, which is a nice filler.
Yeah.
What else you got? What else? What's on the home front? Any Leisureman tips this week? I just finished The Move. That went pretty well.
Yeah. What, is it done?
Pretty much done, yeah. Moving into the new house.
So what are you going to do now? Like,
projects?
Because you're like a serial house shopper. Like,
yeah.
Have you been on the house websites?
No, I'm thinking about, you know, I subscribe to like Trulia and Zillow and they get the...
Yeah, alerts. Yeah. So what happens now when they send you a house in that particular state?
I choose not to click on ones that I think I would like. Like if I see a house in a certain price range near where I live, I purposely don't click on it and I hit delete. I got to unsubscribe to these things. Because what if I find a house that
I know
looks a little better than mine for like the same price that's only six blocks away?
Is there such a thing as real estate fear of missing out?
There should be. I think real estate is the safest investment in our country.
Right. But after you make the purchase, you play the regret game. Like you do on a lot of other kind of purchases.
You know, my brother-in-law is pretty well off. You've met my brother-in-law. He lives in a very nice community in Connecticut. And it's funny. He said to me once about his house. I go, anything you'd do different with this house? He goes, yeah, I kind of wish I would have done this because he built it from scratch. He built a really beautiful home. But he goes, the one thing, Paul, he goes, you got to just realize there's always someone just around the corner who has a bigger, nicer house than you. And he has a really nice house, but you go four buildings down, there's a house that you're like, oh my God, oh my Lord, who lives here? Will Smith? I mean, look at this place. And my brother-in-law's house is nothing to sneeze at. But you got to shut it off because there's always a nicer car. There's always a nicer house. And if you get caught up, you got to get over that, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I am not a property owner.
When do you think you're going to go that way?
Well, I mean, we'd have to move out of New York. We can't. You know how like the floor of the market in New York is unbelievable now.
Unbelievable.
It's now like $2 million to get a two bedroom. $2 million.
It's
like,
crazy.
Where are people getting these $1 million from? Can I ask you that?
Are there any middle class people who live in New York City? In Manhattan, can you be an owner?
An owner.
Could you make real quick, because we're going to wrap up the show.
This is, by the way, what you're talking about is like a really big topic. Like, it's not, like, you're not just saying that offhand. That's a huge issue.
Okay, let's say a 30-year-old man and woman decide to get married, and they each make $100,000 a year. Okay, I bet a lot of people listening would love to be in that situation.
Yeah.
$100,000 even.
Yeah.
So combined income is $200,000 a year. Based off that, using my expertise-ish of real estate, they could afford a home of about maybe $700,000 realistically, like if they were going to buy something in the suburbs.
That's it.
It's supposed to be three times your salary for the price of the home.
Right, so that would be six. Seven seems a little on the high end,
okay,
to be honest.
I'm stretching a little bit.
Yeah.
What could you buy in Manhattan for $700,000? A studio?
You could buy a one-bedroom, but what if you want to have a family?
No.
You could not buy a family-style apartment. You couldn't do it.
You'd have to move out of New York City.
Or you'd have to rent.
Yeah.
Which so many people do.
Which is a terrible financial decision, but good in a temporary way to keep your... It is. It's a good temporary way
New York,
to
it's not
commit your funds.
Yeah. In New York, it's not necessarily a thing, because in New York, you take big risks on real estate. A lot of people who bought in 2005 are still underwater a little bit. So... You're right. It is not a great idea. But generally, like, it's a problem. Like, and I don't know. And hey, you know, New York's not alone. Have you heard about LA and San Francisco and Boston and Washington, D.C.? The real estate markets in urban areas are getting destroyed right now.
I told you, my buddy Vinny, who lives in Boston,
yeah.
And he put his house up for sale. He had four bids in one day, and one of them was like a good chunk over what he wanted for it,
yeah.
What the asking price. And it was 24 hours he sold his house. His realtor goes, be ready to move because they're coming.
Unbelievable. I know. So I should buy in Boston.
Right. Thanks for listening to Leisure and Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by Guinness. Now, St. Patrick's Day is over. That doesn't mean Guinness is over. This is when the pros, this is when the people who are committed to the Guinness lifestyle go to the store and buy Guinness. They have restocked by now. Go to your local package store. Go to your local pub.
Yeah, and if you tried Guinness on St. Patrick's Day, you probably got a taste for it. And don't limit yourself to St. Patrick's Day. Enjoy.
Enjoy. My wife even says every year on St. Patrick's Day, she has a few more Guinnesses, Guinness Eye, than usual. She always goes, you know what? It's so light and creamy. I just love it. It's the best. And then she continues to have it throughout the year. But years ago, she was just a St. Patrick's Day person.
Yeah. No need to be that.
No. Commit for the whole year. Do it now. Get some Guinness.
Every day can be St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Not actually not technically.
I mean, that would be, yeah, it'd be a lot of cleanup. If that
would be a mess.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, you know.
Guinness would like it.
The river can be green for only so long.
And Guinness would sign up for that. They make some good sales. All right. Thanks for listening to the Leisure Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Pabst. He's Perloff. We're done.